Hello, this is Kathy from the Talking Information Center. Today is Wednesday, August 19th, 2026, and I'll be reading from the Patriot Ledger. Supporters plan rallies for Lindsey Clancy. Over the past 4 weeks, the Clancy trial has attracted intense public attention and wall-to-wall media coverage. But unlike the Karen Reed trial, zealous interest in the Clancy case has not translated into a large physical presence of supporters at Plymouth Superior Courthouse. That may change today. There will be a rally at 7:45 a.m. at 52 Obery Street in Plymouth. No press protesting, no rallying, no signs, the event's online website reads. We stand in silence, united hand in hand, wearing pink to show Lindsey Clancy the peaceful support she deserved. Renee Kimball, the website's administrator, has created space for visitors to leave messages of love and support for Lindsey. Over the past 4 days, messages have come in from across the United States and internationally, with people posting from Scotland, Australia, and Canada. I may not know you personally, but I wanted to reach out with a message of support, hope, and solidarity, one message reads. Please know that you are not facing this ordeal alone. Women globally are standing with you, caring about you, believing in you. You are supported, valued, and not forgotten. Another thread on the website prompts visitors to organize local gatherings in their own communities. Commentators have posted flyers advertising events on Thursday in various cities across the United States, including Austin, Tampa, Sacramento, Raleigh, and New York City. One flyer advertised an event in the Dutch city of Utrecht. A spreadsheet posted by Kimball shows events in 15 states, including back-to-back events on August 18th and 20th at 6 a.m. outside Tewksbury Hospital, the state psychiatric hospital where Clancy is detained during her trial. Clancy stands charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of her children, Cora, 5, Dawson, 3, and Callan, 8 months, in January 2023. The prosecution says she acted deliberately and rationally when she strangled the children, while the defense says she suffered a psychotic break after healthcare providers over-medicated and misdiagnosed postpartum mental health illness. GoFundMe fundraiser for Lindsey Clancy's parents nears $1 million. A GoFundMe to help the parents of Lindsey Clancy and the 36-year-old Duxbury mother on trial, charged with killing her 3 young children in January 2023, has raised nearly $1 million in less than 1 week. More than 25,400 people have donated more than $830,000 as of 12:30 p.m. August 17th for Mike and Paula Musgrove, Clancy's parents, and the beneficiaries of the fundraiser. The GoFundMe, called the Musgrove Family Fund, has a goal of $2 million. For more than 3 years, Mike and Paula have shown up for Lindsey, the page's description says. They have attended her court proceedings and relocated from their Connecticut home to Massachusetts so they can be close to their daughter. The fund will go toward the accumulated cost of travel, lodging, living expenses, and other family expenses arising from their continued support of Lindsey throughout her case. The prosecution says Clancy acted deliberately and rationally when she strangled Cora, 5, Dawson, 3, and Callan, 8 months with exercise bands in the basement of their Duxbury home on January 24, 2023. Clancy's attorney, Kevin Reddington, admits Clancy strangled the children but has portrayed her as a devoted mother desperately seeking help for worsening postpartum symptoms, who was misdiagnosed and over-medicated before she suffered a psychotic break when she killed the children before attempting suicide. This is not the first GoFundMe connected with the Clancys. Soon after the children's deaths, nearly 16,000 people donated more than $1 million for Patrick Clancy, the children's father, and Lindsey Clancy's then-husband for medical bills, funeral services, and legal help in the wake of the tragedy. 147 cyclospora cases reported in the state amid outbreak. Massachusetts has been added to the list affected by cyclospora outbreak, according to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. More than 140 cases of cyclosporiasis have been reported in Massachusetts, leading Massachusetts to officially being declared part of the outbreak. Maine was also added to the list. It has also been confirmed that recalled iceberg lettuce products from Taylor Fresh Foods from June 29th through July 16th were distributed in the Commonwealth as well as Maine. Recalled products should no longer be available for sale, the FDA said. If you previously purchased or received food items with recalled iceberg lettuce from Taylor Farms of Mexico, carefully clean and sanitize any surfaces or containers that it touched. Here's what you need to know about the Cyclospora outbreak. Cyclosporiasis is a parasitic foodborne illness that can cause explosive diarrhea. It has been recorded in Massachusetts this summer, according to the state's Department of Public Health. As of August 17th, there have been 147 cases. Cyclosporiasis is caused by Cyclospora chaetenteritis, a parasite often found on produce. A Michigan-based outbreak linked to recalled iceberg lettuce grown by Taylor Farms in Mexico has been identified as the largest nationwide, according to the Food and Drug Administration. Some of the recalled lettuce products were distributed to food service locations in Massachusetts. In the United States, people can become sick with cyclosporiasis by eating contaminated, uncooked produce, according to the DPH. Previous outbreaks have been linked to fresh produce such as raspberries, fresh basil, cilantro, scallions, snow peas, and bagged salad, the department said. Outside the U.S., in areas where cyclospora is endemic, people can also become sick by drinking contaminated water, according to the DPH. Those in Massachusetts who suspect they got sick after eating food prepared outside a private home, such as at a restaurant, are urged to report it to the DPH through its Report My Meal page. People typically start noticing cyclosporiasis symptoms about 1 week after eating food or drinking water infected with cyclospora, according to the CDC. Most common symptoms of cyclosporiasis include watery or explosive diarrhea, loss of appetite, weight loss, cramping, bloating, increased gas, nausea, fatigue loss. Other common symptoms may include vomiting, body aches, headache, low-grade fever. How to get a free child ID kit in Norfolk County. Families in Norfolk County can request free child identification kits from the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office to keep at home for use during a missing person emergency. The kits are available to residents across the Norfolk County community, according to a community announcement. If a family member goes missing, a completed kit can be provided to law enforcement to assist efforts to reunite families. Each child ID kit includes two inkless fingerprint cards, a medical and physical information section, and a DNA collection section with a space for a recent photograph and one applicator. Community members who would like a child ID kit can contact Kathy Rose at the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office by email at krose@norfolksheriffma.org. The Norfolk County Sheriff's Office said distribution of the kits is funded through a grant and supported by partnerships with several law enforcement organizations. Participating partners include the Department of Justice, the National Sheriff's Association, and the Major County Sheriffs of America, according to the announcement. Judge postpones Luigi Mangione's state trial. Luigi Mangione's New York murder trial in the 2024 killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson has been postponed after he pleaded guilty to federal charges and moved to have the state case dismissed, court records show. Judge Gregory Caro issued a brief order August 17th giving Manhattan prosecutors until October 9th to respond to a defense motion arguing that New York's double jeopardy law bars the state's prosecution. Caro also scheduled Mangione's next court appearance for December 10th, postponing the trial, which had been scheduled to begin September 8th. The killing of Thompson, 50, drew national attention and was widely condemned by public officials. At the same time, the case became a flashpoint in the wider public discourse over frustrations with the U.S. health insurance industry. Mangione, 28, admitted in federal court on August 14th that he fatally shot Thompson outside a New York City hotel on December 4th, 2024. He pleaded guilty to two federal charges of stalking, resulting in death. His legal team then filed the motion in the New York case, arguing that the state's double jeopardy law protects him from being prosecuted and punished twice for the same conduct. Mangione entered his federal plea without making a deal with federal prosecutors, and there is no guarantee that taking responsibility will result in any leniency at his sentencing. Federal prosecutors initially charged Mangione with murder through the use of a firearm and sought the death penalty. But earlier this year, a U.S. district judge dismissed the two most serious federal charges, removing the possibility of capital punishment. Jamie McDonald, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, previously said his office will seek the maximum sentence of life in prison. During his August 14th plea hearing, Mangione admitted to ambushing Thompson outside the hotel after planning the attack. He told the court that he 3D printed a handgun and traveled to New York with the intention of shooting Thompson. Surveillance footage and forensic evidence, including DNA and ballistics found by investigators, had linked the suspect to the scene. Mangione was arrested 5 days later on December 4, 2024, in Altoona, Pennsylvania, after an employee and customers at a McDonald's restaurant recognized him from images that were released by the New York Police Department, authorities said. Police officials previously said they had matched the gun found in Mangione's possession to casings discovered outside the hotel where Thompson was fatally shot. Investigators also matched Mangione's fingerprints to those found on a water bottle and a protein bar wrapper near the scene, according to officials. In December 2024, Mangione pleaded not guilty to state murder, weapons, and forgery charges brought by Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. If convicted in New York State Court, Mangione faces a sentence of 25 years to life on the murder charges. He also faces charges in Pennsylvania. Iran faces growing economic pressure. Rulers concerned about resurgence of unrest. Even as Iran projects resilience in the war with the United States, its leaders are worried that a threat of more economic punishment by President Donald Trump could increase hardships, reignite unrest, and further erode the Islamic Republic's legitimacy. Trump vowed on August 14th to hit Iran hard economically, a day after Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said Washington would impose measures on Tehran that have never been seen. Washington has not said what those measures will entail. For all the bravado of Iran's leaders after holding out in nearly 6 months of conflict and effectively closing the Strait of Hormuz, a vital global oil supply route, they face mounting pressure at home that could result in nationwide unrest, according to three Iranian officials. The officials, two political insiders, a former Iranian official, and a dozen ordinary Iranians, spoke to Reuters on condition of anonymity, either for fear of retribution or because they are not authorized to speak to media. Iran entered the war with high inflation, a weakening currency, energy shortages, sanctions, and deep structural weaknesses, and must now contend with damaged infrastructure, disrupted trade, lost production, and the cost of rebuilding. Arshia, a civil engineer, spent a decade working in Iran's construction industry before the war that began with the U.S. and Israeli attacks on February 28th, brought projects largely to a standstill. He is now struggling to find work as projects are delayed or canceled and costs soar, with little prospect of rapid recovery. I'm worried. If Trump imposes more sanctions, how will ordinary people survive? I don't want my country to be punished militarily or economically. We're already struggling, said the father of two from the central city of Isfahan. His plight reflects a broader reality across Iran, where U.S. strikes damaged factories, power plants, transport networks, and other critical infrastructure, adding to pressure on an already strained economy. Mohsen, 53, was forced to shut his small import-export business with Gulf countries after Iran retaliated against U.S. strikes by targeting American bases and assets in the region. I had to lay off 10 employees. It was painful, but I had no choice. I could no longer afford to pay their salaries, and now I'm relying on my savings to support my family, he said, from the southern port city of Bandar Abbas. Iran's annual inflation rate reached 66% in July, while consumer prices were 87.9% higher than a year earlier, according to Iran's statistical center. Food inflation hit 128% year on year. The recent appointment of Hossein Taib, a key architect of past crackdowns, to lead Iran's Bashi militia is one of the clearest signs yet of growing concern over a resurgence of unrest, a former reformist official said. The Bashi, a paramilitary volunteer militia, is affiliated with Iran's powerful Revolutionary Guards, which have both been used by the clerical rulers to quell protests. Economic grievances have repeatedly spilled into nationwide protests in Iran in recent years. In January, protests over economic hardships were crushed by the two forces, with thousands killed. In recent months, Iran's clerical rulers have responded to fears of renewed unrest with executions, arrests, summonses, and lengthy prison sentences targeting journalists, lawyers, activists, human rights advocates, and students, rights groups say. Families are cutting back on meat and other staples, opting for cheaper alternatives. I'm ashamed in front of my children. My salary is gone within days. Meat and chicken have disappeared from our table. I have no idea how we're going to get by, said Hossein, a government employee in the central city of Yazd. Rents rose 31% year over year in March, according to the Statistical Center, while state media reported Tehran housing prices at roughly 50% above last year. Iran's minimum wage was raised by about 60% this year, but continued rial depreciation has eroded purchasing power, with the dollar value of the minimum wage falling from about $105 to $86 since late March. Bijan, 40, earned about $1,000 a month as an engineer when he entered the job market 15 years ago. He has since turned to online tutoring to make ends meet. Now he and his wife struggle to make about $400 a month and have left Tehran for a cheaper province. I used to work maybe 5 or 6 hours a day. Now it's all work or looking for work or feeling anxious about not having enough work, said Bijan. For many Iranians, fear of renewed conflict has made planning for the future increasingly difficult. Iran has sought to keep essential goods moving through alternative routes, including land corridors and the Caspian Sea, but those alternatives are also coming under strain. Strikes on bridges have disrupted overland transport, increasing the cost and time needed to move goods into Iran. President Masoud Pezeshkian recently acknowledged the squeeze, saying, "Our problems have multiplied several times over while our income has also fallen. Goods that once arrived by ship now take longer routes into Iran, driving up prices," he said, adding that Iran is selling less oil and collecting less tax revenue from damaged or struggling businesses. The blockade has also effectively cut off Iran's gasoline imports, lawmaker Reza Sepahvand told Iran's ILNA news agency on August 15th. Poll: Trump approval rating hits new low. President Donald Trump's polling woes continue as he fell to a new record low since his return to the White House, according to a new Reuters Ipsos survey, with only 1 in 3 Americans approving of his job performance. The poll released August 17th found that only 33% of Americans approved of Trump's performance, down 2 percentage points from another Reuters Ipsos poll earlier this month. Trump's performance on the August 17th poll marks the lowest approval rating the president has seen in Reuters Ipsos tracking since his return to the White House in 2025. The numbers also tie Trump's worst approval rating during his first term in office in December 2017. The Reuters Ipsos poll was conducted August 14th to 17th among 1,166 U.S. adults. The poll's margin of error was plus or minus 3 percentage points. The president's continued slump in the polls comes as an overwhelming majority of Americans said they were concerned that the war on Iran would continue for an extended period of time. The ongoing war has paralyzed a fifth of the global oil trade, causing gas prices in the United States to shoot up. According to AAA, the average price of a gallon of gas sat at $4.06 on August 17th, an increase of nearly a dollar from the $3.13 per gallon recorded on the same date in 2025. Trump, who campaigned on promises to keep inflation in check and avoid long-lasting wars, initially pledged the conflict with Iran would take a few weeks. But Iran has proven resilient and has kept the oil trade through the Strait of Hormuz largely bottled up even as the conflict has cooled. Some 80% of Americans, including 87% of Democrats and 71% of Republicans, think U.S. involvement in Iran will go on for an extended period of time, the Reuters Ipsos poll found. Just 16% said the conflict would likely end in a few weeks. Trump told a political rally in Garden City, New York on August 14th that paying a tiny little bit more for your gasoline is worth the cost of ensuring a very evil country could not have a nuclear weapon, one of his stated rationales for the war. Throughout the conflict, the president has alternated between threats of escalation and assertions that a peace deal is imminent. Only 1 in 5 Americans and just half of Republicans think the war has been worth it, the latest Reuters Ipsos poll found. Americans' pessimism about an end to the war comes as Trump threatened to bomb Oman, an ally of the United States, if its negotiations with Iran over the Strait of Hormuz interfere with U.S. efforts to reach a peace deal with Tehran. While individual polls vary, major polling averages continue to show Trump in negative territory overall. Real Clear Politics, August 17th, 39.2% approve, 58.4% disapprove. New York Times, August 17th, 37% approve, 60% disapprove. Silver Bulletin, August 17th, 38.3% approve, and 58% disapprove. Levitt exit fuels buzz on successor. A look at potential picks for next press secretary. Caroline Levitt's sudden announcement that she will soon step down as White House press secretary has fueled widespread speculation about President Donald Trump's upcoming pick to replace her. Plenty of names are being floated as Trump prepares to choose his next chief spokesperson and one of the top faces of the Trump administration. Levitt, who cited her desire to spend more time with her two young children, formally departs the White House at the end of August. Levitt used the position to set the tone for the president's agenda and the administration's response to attacks from opponents. Trump often has an eye toward what he calls central casting for the parts when he fills White House staff and cabinet positions. Trump likes those who are telegenic and speak with authority, characteristics that are prerequisites for the very public role of press secretary. 5 of the 6 press secretaries across Trump's 2 terms in office have been women. Trump has not indicated who he may pick, but here are 10 names receiving early speculation as potential Levitt replacements. Alina Habba, a former personal attorney for Trump, gained notoriety in 2024 as the president's defense counsel during his legal proceedings in New York. She makes frequent appearances in front of television cameras on Trump's behalf. After his 2024 election victory, Trump named Habba counselor to the president. He later nominated her as the top federal prosecutor in New Jersey. In December, Habba resigned as U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey after a federal appeals court ruled she was serving in the role unlawfully because she was never confirmed by Congress. Scott Jennings. Conservative political commentator Scott Jennings is known for his spirited arguments with Democrats as a senior political contributor for CNN. The Kentucky native, who also hosts a radio show, last year published a glowing book about Trump titled A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Anna Kelly. Anna Kelly currently serves under Levitt in the White House press office as principal deputy press secretary. The White House has increasingly deployed Kelly in front of the camera for interviews with Fox News, primarily discussing the Iran war and other foreign policy items. Katie Miller, former press secretary for Vice President Mike Pence and the wife of Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller, is a known commodity in Trump world. Miller worked as a top aide for the Trump administration's Department of Government Efficiency, led by tech executive Elon Musk. She stepped down last August to launch her own podcast where she frequently interviews Trump officials. Her guests have included Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Matthew Boyle, Washington bureau chief of the conservative outlet Breitbart, could get a look if Trump wants a press secretary with close ties to conservative media. Boyle has interviewed Trump multiple times, including in the Oval Office in June. The New York Post reported Boyle is an early frontrunner for the job, calling him a favorite among well-connected Trump allies who recognize the dogged Breitbart scribe's fiery but steady presence in the conservative media ecosystem. Stephen Chung, a longtime loyal Trump communications aide, known for his tough, no-nonsense approach, could be considered for press secretary if Trump wants to appoint from within the White House. Chung leads the White House communications office in Trump's second term as communications director. Chung works primarily behind the scenes, however. Taylor Budowich, a longtime Trump advisor, left the White House last September for the private sector after serving as deputy chief of staff. In his former role, Budowich oversaw White House communications and cabinet affairs. He previously worked as Trump's 2020 campaign spokesperson and helped manage the pro-Trump super PAC known as Make America Great Again, Inc. Romy Daravi, who served as deputy communications director during Trump's first term, is currently vice president of public relations at the Kennedy Center, which Trump has worked to overhaul. Jason Miller is another longtime trusted Trump aide and campaign spokesperson, joined the Trump White House this summer to work on messaging before the November midterm elections. Miller worked in senior capacities for all three of Trump's presidential runs and has frequently defended the president in front of television cameras and other reporters. After the 2024 election, Miller worked as a lobbyist before returning to work for Trump. Carrie Lake. Another name bandied around is Carrie Lake, the former news anchor who lost Arizona elections for governor in 2022 and U.S. Senate in 2024. Trump is a big fan of Lake. However, in May, he nominated Lake to be his U.S. ambassador to Jamaica, a role that would prevent her from becoming press secretary. Border wall work in Texas National Park paused. Federal officials have paused a controversial construction project linked to President Donald Trump's southwest border wall through Big Bend National Park in Texas. While federal officials did not plan to build a wall through the park, public lands advocates were outraged when contractors began bulldozing access roads through the area in early to mid-August. Videos recorded by activists captured bulldozers and track hoes cutting through the desert soil and across cliffs. Last night, I put a pause on all activity in that park as far as construction goes until I can get down there and do a personal evaluation, talk to some stakeholders, and talk to local law enforcement in that area, Customs and Border Patrol Commissioner Rodney Scott said in an August 17th video statement. Although very few illegal border crossers currently try to cross the rugged landscape, federal officials said they needed roads to both install surveillance equipment and permit routine patrol access in case migration patterns change. The Trump administration angered public land groups in June by waiving environmental laws that would have otherwise slowed or prohibited that construction. That's all the time we have for today. I'm Kathy, and thank you for listening to the Patriot Ledger at the Talking Information Center.